Thank you for tuning in, everyone. We apologize for the technical difficulties. My name is Mike Krueger, the Director of New Media for the Department of Commerce. I'm here with Gary Locke, the Secretary of Commerce. The editor from Fast Company has been unfortunately stuck on a train. She'll be jumping in hopefully at some moment when she gets here. In the meantime, I'm going to ask the Secretary questions that were submitted through the Fast Company website. So without further ado, let me ask the first question, Locke. It's been the news lately a lot, Secretary. What plans are in place to increase the level of privacy protection for individuals in the electronic marketplace? U.S. privacy law has not kept up with technology, and tracking individuals is easier than ever, and there appears to be no direction from the government to creating boundaries on corporations or those who gather and store information. Should we move to a more restrictive practice in line with Canada or the EU?
Well, we know that trust is a major issue on all transactions over the internet. Already we're seeing the use of the internet for trillions of dollars every single year from businesses interacting, conducting transactions to individuals making purchases, paying their bills, handling all their finances over the internet. And if we're to realize the full potential of the internet, there has to be trust. And so we at the Department of Commerce are putting together a report, set of recommendations to the President on how to approach that, and we'll be releasing that shortly. But we all have to focus on increasing the trust level over the internet so that consumers have full information on how their information might be used, might be disseminated, what is actually being tracked and recorded, so that there's full knowledge. And hopefully we'll be able to increase that trust level.
Excellent. I might also want to add for our viewers, we are still taking questions through whitehouse.gov and through Twitter with the hashtag LockChat. So we will be pulling from those questions a little bit later. Second question for you, Secretary. If the mandate of the Department of the Commerce Department is to innovate at home, what steps are we putting in place to encourage corporations to conduct research here in the U.S. and not ship those jobs overseas?
Well, first of all, the President has called for making permanent the tax credit for research and development. It has actually lapsed, and I think that lack of predictability and certainty with respect to those tax incentives for creating research and development here in the United States encourages companies to set up research centers overseas. The second thing is that we've really expanded a whole host of programs to focus on the commercialization of research that occurs in the United States and how we can best get that to the marketplace. And for instance, at the Department of Commerce, we have this Office of Innovation and Entrepreneurship, as well as a National Advisory Council of some of the great minds and individuals who've been engaged in research and development here in the United States, giving us real practical solutions and ideas on how we can really encourage more R&D here in America as opposed to going abroad.
Okay, well, I think actually segueing from that, the next question was about innovation and entrepreneurship initiatives that universities are often involved. The question is, what mechanisms are in place to prevent universities from competing head-to-head from not competing head-to-head with small businesses?
Well, first of all, we know that so much of the research in the United States actually occurs within the private sector. And of course, the federal government provides grants for research at federal labs as well as at our colleges and universities. But the key thing is that these are really not in competition with each other. So much of the research that occurs at our college and university level eventually ends up in the private sector. A lot of startup companies are created based off the research that occurs in the colleges and universities, but these are private companies now that actually take these ideas, hire employees, and then really create the jobs of the new economy. There might be some financial arrangement with the colleges and universities in terms of sharing of some of the royalties and the income, but by and large, the universities are turning this over to the private sector. The thing that we need to focus on is how do we hasten that transfer of ideas from the colleges and universities to the private sector? And how do we really help those private sector entities get the funding that they need to really take off? And so we're really looking at such issues as the so-called valley of death, that gap, that chasm in which companies are not able to make it because they can't get the financing they need.
Thank you. There's a question that relates to communities of color. The question is, do you contemplate any special investments made directly to communities of color to help spur economic growth and entrepreneurship, especially given how tough many communities are facing?
Well, that's why we have within the Department of Commerce the a Minority Business Development Agency that really is focusing on the issues that people of color, minority firms, women-owned firms really face. And they're really focusing on entrepreneurship and innovation, special grants, technical assistance, also just helping them secure business from state and local governments as well as the federal government. And then we also really need to look at the use of technology, high-speed internet and broadband services to companies that are now disadvantaged.
Okay, well, let me go on to the next question, which I think relates to that nicely. What role do you envision broadband playing, if any, in increasing entrepreneurship, job training, or particularly with low and underemployed individuals?
I think with the advent of high-speed internet service, broadband, that really it's going to open up opportunities for people, whether in the rural areas or disadvantaged communities and minorities in the urban settings. First of all, with the use of high-speed internet service, people will be able to take courses from almost any in any subject matter they want, whether it's a student or an adult or a business owner. So many courses are now available for free, or you can audit these courses from some of the highest, best colleges, universities around the world. And you can learn on your own. Second of all, the use of the internet will enable companies to market their services to customers all around the world, whether you're a bed and breakfast in a rural part of the state of Washington, or you're a small minority-owned business making a very specific product. You can start to market your specialty, your goods and services to people around the world. So the advent of technology is really going to help level the playing field, not eliminate it, but help level the playing field for minority-owned businesses and other disadvantaged entities.
Okay. The next question still coming from the Fast Company submitted questions are, where does the government stand with regard to encouraging small, and by this the questioner said 3 to 5 people, small web business formation? Specifically, is the government going to subsidize certain blossoming industries?
Well, first of all, for instance, talking about broadband, the Department of Commerce has awarded almost $5 billion in grants to develop high-speed internet service in underserved communities all across the nation. I think with our grants, we're either building or upgrading over 200,000 miles of broadband or high-speed internet. We're hooking up a whole host of colleges, universities, medical centers, and then the private sector is going to be tapping into this almost like this freeway that we're building, which will then serve individual businesses and homes. But the most important thing is that since the president took office, some 16 different tax measures have been passed by the Congress, specifically focused on small and medium-sized businesses, from incentives, tax credits for hiring people, to bonus depreciation or outright writing off up to $500,000 of expenses, to allowing you, if you're a sole proprietor, to deduct. To get a tax credit on your cost of health insurance for yourself, but also your family members, to eliminating 100% the capital gains taxes that on investments, increased in investments, or the value of investments in small businesses. A whole host of tax measures specifically targeted to small and medium-sized companies.
Excellent. Welcome to the live viewers. It appears though our technical issues have been solved, and so we're live. Just so you know, to catch you up, we've had the editor from Fast Company is on her way. In the meantime, I'm filling in. I've been asking some questions from Fast Company, but it seems appropriate now that we're streaming live to ask you our first web question. And I believe it's Kumu would like to know, are you working on any new initiatives from the recent trip to India?
Well, actually, the recent trip to India was a great success. The president was able to announce over $10 billion in sales of U.S. goods and services, of export content here in the United States. That is over $10 billion of made in USA goods and services to India, and creating over 50,000 or supporting 50,000 jobs here in America. We're actually following up with another trade mission in early February, focusing on technology, high technology goods from medical equipment to energy, helping American companies sell more of their made in USA goods and services to India. Because the more that American companies export, the more they produce. The more they produce, the more people they need, the more people they're going to hire. And that means good paying jobs here in America.
Excellent. And we are still taking web questions. And if you missed the first part, then that will be posted. The entirety of this will be posted later on whitehouse.gov. I'm going to ask the Secretary one last question and then hand it off to our guest from Fast Company. So, Secretary, let me ask you this while we change places. What steps are you taking to rejuvenate America's small business, especially after passing the Health Care Reform Act and increasing taxation on profits?
Well, actually, we haven't increased taxes on any profits. Taxes have actually gone down. Some 16 different tax measures have been passed benefiting small and medium-sized companies. Actually, the health care law benefits small businesses because under the health care law, there is no requirement that small businesses offer health insurance to their employees. No penalty if small businesses with less than 50 employees, no penalty if they don't offer health care insurance to their employees. But if they do, for the first time now, they actually get tax credits and a lowering of their taxes. That's actually going to help. But let me just say that these 16 tax measures reducing taxes run the gamut from outright forgiveness of Social Security taxes for hiring people who were previously unemployed to allowing companies to write off and have higher deductions for their purchases of equipment or investment in equipment. If you're a startup company, just saying, hey, you don't have to pay a lot of your expenses in starting up a company are tax deductible to even tax deductions for health insurance for your own family members if you're, for instance, a self-employed or a sole proprietorship. So those are the things that we're really doing to help small businesses grow and expand. Because actually we know that small businesses account for some most of the jobs in America. 40% of all the jobs in the United States are from companies that were created after 1980. And indeed, virtually all of the net new jobs in America over the last several decades came from startup companies. So we need to help startup companies.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cook. I'm a senior editor at Fast Company, and I'm just joining all of you. Secretary Locke, I'm so sorry I was late.
Oh, no, that's all right.
Can you do anything to solve Amtrak? Anyway, we're here to talk about innovation, entrepreneurship, new businesses, small businesses. And I thought we should take a question from Twitter first. So one of our readers wants to know, how will councils help companies bringing new technologies to market survive the endless federal approval process?
Well, actually, what we're focusing on now is a lot more coordination among the federal agencies. The president has really tasked us to break down the silos within the federal agencies. And so we're really coordinating, trying to make sure the left hand knows what the right hand is doing, and really working together to combine a lot of our programs so that's almost a seamless array of services to benefit the small and medium-sized companies and entrepreneurs. For instance, the Small Business Administration and Department of Commerce are working hand-in-hand on entrepreneurship programs. We at the Commerce Department now have folks that are cross-trained in all the programs offered by Small Business Administration and even Defense Department diversification programs so that when a person comes in and talks to some of our folks out in the field, we're able to be that one-stop shop of information and services for them. Because business owners, entrepreneurs, don't have the time to go to five or six different offices of the federal government, let's say in the city of Seattle or Philadelphia, as they're trying to look for funding, trying to look for help, looking for financing, and just getting through the regulatory process. And so we're really trying to break down these barriers, speed things along, such as making sure that the federal government pays its bills within 30 days. And I'm proud to say that the Commerce Department, virtually all of our bills for goods and services that really go out to small, medium-sized businesses are paid within 30 days.
One follow-up question to that I know a lot of Fast Company readers are curious about is just capital for small businesses and access to credit. What's the Commerce Department doing about that?
First of all, we have some programs focusing on regional innovation clusters where we're really providing grants through our Economic Development Administration to these clusters, proof of concept centers that are really helping small businesses grow and expand and develop their new innovations and get them to market. The other thing that's really important is that the president recently signed the Small Business Jobs Bill, passed by the Congress, and it took way too long to pass. Finally, we had some bipartisan votes, some Republicans that crossed the aisle to vote for it, and the president signed it. This is money left over from President Bush's TARP program, unused money from President Bush's TARP program. And what it does is it's giving $30 billion of incentives for the community banks, the small banks, to give loans and provide financing for small, medium-sized companies. That is expected to free up some $300 billion of capital and loans financing from the small community banks in favor of small, medium-sized businesses. And in that legislation were eight specific tax reduction measures that will really help small, medium-sized businesses and came from various advisory councils from various departments, including those at the Commerce Department, that said these are the tax measures that would really help small and medium-sized companies grow and expand.
Just to follow up on that, what sort of pressure are you putting on larger banks to lend to small businesses? I know that a lot of community banks and smaller banks have failed this year, and I'm curious to know, you know, what kind of pressure are you exerting on, you know, the Banks of America of the world?
Well, that's a tough one, and that's really governed by various different federal agencies. The administration is, and different federal agencies are urging them to loosen up credit, but they're in a bind because so much of the failure of our big banks came about from loose lending policies, where you know they were giving out loans to people for home mortgages without even checking to see if they could if they had the adequate income to even pay for it. And they were using brokers who got commissions simply by sending more people in and signing them up for mortgages. And because they were independent companies, they weren't on the hook to make sure that these individuals ever paid, because they got their commissions and you know off they were gone. And they didn't care whether or not the people they were sending to the big banks could in fact follow through and pay on the mortgages. So, if anything, the pendulum has swung the other way from very loose lending practices to perhaps overly tight practices. We've heard so many complaints from businesses saying the big banks won't give them funding unless they're the stellar companies. But it's the medium-sized companies who've always been profitable, who've always paid their bills, who've always been on time with their loan repayments, who are finding out that their loans, previous loans, were, let's say, tied to the value of certain real estate. Well, the real estate values have gone down, so then the big banks come in and say, well, we now have to charge higher interest rates or we're going to, your line of credit has been reduced. That's why the community banks are there. And the community banks have really been stepping up. And this program that the president signed really provides rewards, financial incentives for the community banks to actually offer more loans.
One question that we took a bunch of questions from Fast Company readers over the last few days, and they wrote into us asking us about a whole bunch of things. They were thrilled that we were going to talk to you. And Derek Bredensteiner from Scottsdale, Arizona, wanted us to ask you about patents. And he was really curious about, he said, patent thickets are serious threats that prevent innovators and entrepreneurs from taking ideas to the marketplace. And what projects are you doing to address this? I know back in January you had talked about how you were going to streamline the patent process. It takes 3 years. You had promised you would try to streamline it to 12 months. So where are we now with that?
Actually, we're making great progress in streamlining and reducing the time in which it takes to get a patent either approved or denied. Right now, it's 3 years. That is absolutely unacceptable. We are on a mission to get it down to 12 months for all who seek that speed or that time frame. Now, there are some companies like pharmaceutical companies that have to go through FDA processes and through all these trials. They don't need a patent within 1 year. But for just about everyone else, especially our small innovators and entrepreneurs and inventors, patent pending doesn't cut it. Now, maybe for the biggest companies like GE or Dow Chemical or someone else, patent pending is fine. But if you're working out of your garage or your own basement, or you're a small entrepreneur, you can't get financing to create a big company or a new company if you say, I don't have a patent, I have a patent pending, but wait 3 years and I'll prove to you that I have title. It's like going to the bank and saying, give me a loan to remodel my house, but I can't show you that I actually have a deed to this house, but can you wait 3 years? You're not going to get that financing. And so the longer we take in processing a patent, the more we're delaying the commercialization and the job creation built around great ideas and inventions. So we are on a mission to do that. We actually have a new model program called our Green Tech Program, where we guarantee, well, just about guarantee, that we'll be able to issue a patent within 1 year for green technology proposals. We're expanding that to include life sciences and medical discoveries other than drugs and things like that. And that'll eventually will be our template for all patents, giving patents within a year for all who want it within that time frame. We're reducing the backlog. We're instituting a whole host of process improvement projects to get it down, and we're seeing results. It will not happen overnight because we're starting with such a huge backlog, and to get it down from 3 years down to 1 year is going to take a lot of heavy lifting. But the employees are engaged, they're enthusiastic, the patent community is engaged, they're enthusiastic.
Now, what's the time frame? I just want to be clear. What's the time frame for when you hope to get it down to the 12 months?
The current projection is that it'll probably take us about two and a half years to get it down to the full 12 month. That's why we've started some of these special pilot programs, for instance, on the green tech program, or we're looking at a life sciences a program. But already we're seeing, in some cases, the green tech program where patents have been issued in 6 months.
Oh, wow. One other question. This one comes from another Fast Company reader, Chris Reich. He asks, how can the incentive to move manufacturing offshore be reduced and the incentive to rebuild our industrial base be increased?
Well, one of the things that you're seeing is that the cost of manufacturing, the low cost advantages that certain companies, countries have, is disappearing. You hear about the rising cost of labor in China and elsewhere in Asia. And in fact, you're seeing that the cost of labor now is getting to be a smaller cost of the overall cost of producing a widget. As a result, you're seeing a lot more manufacturing now coming to the United States. I mean, BMW recently opened up a plant building their 300 series automobiles in South Carolina. And not only are they building it for the American consumer, they're actually going to be exporting to other parts of the world 25% of the cars that are being built in South Carolina. Other companies have, like ThyssenKrupp, have opened up a factory here in the United States. People are interested in just-in-time delivery. They want, they're concerned about the rising cost of fuel and transportation cost. A lot more interest in locating those manufacturing facilities here. The other thing is that the Recovery Act had hundreds of millions of dollars to encourage advanced manufacturing here in the United States. And that's actually seed money and oftentimes matching money with the private sector. We're seeing a lot more battery production, auto parts production, clean energy manufacturing occurring here in the United States now.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's funny you bring up the Recovery Act. One of our readers, Jade Romani from New York, asked, my question is, what are you doing to make it easier for small businesses to get access to funding? Please do not cite the Recovery Act. So I know we talked about sort of, you know, the community banks, you've talked about the Recovery Act. Are there any other ways that small businesses can get funding that you're working on?
Well, for instance, under this Small Business Administration, it has increased their loan guarantee program to guaranteeing 90% of the loans that would be given out through the SBA program. The banks still have to provide the loan, but those banks know that the SBA is going to guarantee 90% of that. And so we've actually seen tens of thousands of increased applications and loans given out through the SBA program for, again, small, medium-sized businesses.
Yeah, that's great.
And of course, all the tax cuts, the 16 specific tax cuts for small, medium-sized businesses, plus the fact that this was part of the Recovery Act, but most people don't know it, but in the Recovery Act, hundreds of, almost $300 billion were by way of tax cuts for families and individuals who work. It's the Make Work tax cut, in addition to the Bush tax cuts. The president campaigned on further reducing taxes for middle-income individuals, and so for married couples or joint filers, it's $800 less they pay per year in income taxes. For single filers, individual filers, it's $400 less that they pay per year by way of income taxes, in addition to all those tax cuts that were targeted specifically at small and medium-sized companies.
Why do you think, just one, this is the last question, and I'm curious about this, why do you think that small business owners aren't aware of these tax cuts and the money they receive through the Recovery Act or through the SBA? Why do you think that is?
Well, I think certainly in this tough economic climate, people are so hunkered down just trying to, you know, take care of their business operations and trying to attract customers and, you know, just doing all their own bookkeeping and things like that. I mean, I have so many friends that are very, very small business owners, and, you know, they don't have much time to really focus on what's happening around the world. You know, they don't subscribe to all these bulletins and trade newsletters that might announce it. And so they're just overwhelmed, and they're worried. And they're out there hustling for additional customers and trying to hang on to their employees and making sure there's not turnover. But nonetheless, there have been a significant number of measures enacted by the Congress at the request of the president, and other measures that have been sometimes tucked away into these more controversial measures that people aren't aware of. And of course, the tax cuts, the $800 per family reduction in income taxes that families have now been receiving for the last 2 years, it wasn't one single check that they got in the mail that they could say, oh, wow, look at this $800 tax cut. It's been spread every paycheck, and so it's a small amount. And I think a lot of people said, wow, thanks to my employer, they gave me a pay raise. It wasn't a pay raise from the employer. It was at the request of President Obama.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us. I'm here with Secretary of Commerce Gary Locke, and I'm Nancy Cook. I'm a senior editor at Fast Company. If you missed any of this, it will be live on whitehouse.gov and also fastcompany.com. And thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks.